Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Loud and Local continues on The Rock with Kevin Deers, 99.9 KISW.
All right, how's it going? My name is Kevin Deers, and I'm back here with Thomas Eric from The Fall of Troy. And first off, that's how I pronounce it, right? Eric? Thomas Eric?
Eric.
Okay, you know what?
It's Croatian.
That's awesome. Right on, man. So first off, how are you doing tonight, man? You're outside. You're up in Mukilteo area. Is that right?
No. I live in the U District.
Never mind. You're from Mukilteo, but you live in the U District. Beautiful night tonight.
Very, very.
How have you been the last few months? Been a crazy, I mean, safe to say we've all been going through it. What's kept you, motivated? What's kept you busy? How have you been, staying sane during these pandemic times?
I've been lucky enough, I think I'm lucky enough to have like people around me that believe in me a lot. And it came to a point like with the pandemic thing and the lockdown where everybody started to go kind of crazy. And I don't know if you know my buddy, Dan Schmidt. He's friends with Jake and stuff.
Okay.
He's like, he was in like Filthy Nun with him, and he was in like Blackout Media. And anyways, he's a fantastic, like multi-instrumentalist, engineer.
Oh, so cool.
I was going through some changes with the solo record I've been working on, kind of in the background over the last almost year, I'd say. And the guy I was making it with, because I'm trying to give you the short run of the long story. It's like, with the solo thing, lately when I've been doing solo music, I don't write anything until I get in the studio. I'm like, I play all the instruments. The guy I was recording my solo record with, we weren't vibing, because he's more of have your shit together, come in, you know, record for 10 days, knock that shit out, and then mix for 4 days, and there's your full length in 2 weeks. And the thing when I'm recording by myself is the complete opposite. It's like, I go, okay, give me a click track at 128, and then I get behind the drum set and I make up a song on the drum set.
Oh, wow. Very improvisational.
Yeah, very much, but try to reel it in, you know, try to make a song structure. And then I'll play as much as I can until I pick up, and then I'll punch in if I have to. Sometimes I just play a whole song, you know, like, and then same thing happens when we have the drum tracks all done. Then I get on the bass and I just make up bass lines over the drums. And then by the time that happens, then we get to guitars, and I kind of know where I'm headed with guitars, and I kind of improv / know where I'm headed with guitars. And then it's, by the time guitars are done, I'm kind of already narrative. The narrative, I can feel the narrative. I can feel what how the music is taking me. And then I write the lyrics, and you know, we put in auxiliary percussion and stuff like that. And that's how I do my solo music. That's how I did. I did a little EP called The Whole Story that's on Bandcamp.
Nice.
ThomasArak.bandcamp.com. There's a five or six song original EP called The Whole Story, and then there's a three song because I had an extra couple days in the studio.
Yeah,
where I did a Weezer cover off Pinkerton.
Nice.
I did a cover of Garbage. I'm only happy when it rains, and I did a cover of an old Sam Cooke song.
Oh, that's awesome.
And put those out, and I put those songs out, and that wasn't like super serious. I just was going through a time of my life where I lived a bunch of places, going through a bunch of heartache, and I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna put up a GoFundMe and see if I can raise, you know, $5,000 to go, you know, make music and just kind of get this out of me. And I raised that $5,000 in like one day, and I had to like change it to $8,000, and then, you know, I had to change it again. So I ended up raising, you know, about close to $10,000 just to go make this little EP. And so very little of it I had written, you know, like, and it was an experiment and it was fun. I wanted to see how well I could make an album by myself. And I did that. And then we had kind of experimented, like on Muckle Tea Earth, we had kind of experimented with this process even prior to that, because my project Pushover, which is a project where it's just me doing all the instruments with my buddy Kirk Travis from A Lot Like Birds and Dance Gavin Dance. You're gonna have to follow me a little. There's been a lot of
I'm
stuff
following, going on, man.
But more or less, it's been me playing all the instruments, making shit up, kind of off the cuff, and then doing this or doing that. And then I challenged Andrew, our drummer in The Fall of Troy, because we recorded a bunch of old songs from back when we were way younger that our fans always want us to like redo and stuff.
Okay.
And we did those, we ported those at Robert Lang. And then we still needed to fill, because what happened was we recorded OK, which was our last release back in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was to get together at our buddy Johnny's basement, you know, do pre-production, yada, 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 then end up at Robert Lang, re-record it all and put that out. Well, by the time we were done in the basement, we went, we're not re-recording these songs. This is the album. This is it. We're not. And Johnny was like, well, what are you going to do with the extra time at Robert Lang? I was like, we're going to make another album.
There you go.
We're going to do, I was like, we'll go back and we'll go record this old stuff that we never actually recorded. We'll reimagine it and kind of, you know, actually be able to pull off what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And then we'll do this process. We'll see if we could do it as a band where I told Andrew this process I had done with Pushover, where I was like, yeah, I just stopped, you know, click track, play, write a song on drums, and then just take it all up from there, you know? And I actually learned that that idea is Blink-182, when they came back and they did their self-titled album, like, after Enema, like the one they actually wrote with Travis.
Yeah.
That's how they did that album. Like, Travis just tracked hours and hours and hundreds of hours of drums, and they edited them all together to make super dope drum tracks, and then they wrote the songs based off of the drum tracks. So that's why all the drums and stuff on that Blink record are like, it just has this more, it's more serious and exciting, you know. So
yeah.
I kind of have been experimenting with that process, because it just, I don't know how to explain it. I think it, improv's always been a big thing for me, because my dad was, you know, a funk kind of jazz rock R&B musician, and I always thought improv was an important thing. But what if you could actually capture like the songwriting, but also the improv, like at the moment that it's happening on a record, you know, like no guitar solo on any of my records is ever written. It's just you know, we'll do multiple takes and sometimes kind of splice certain pieces together if we have to. But I'd like to get as big of a body of work that I possibly can before something fucks up and we have to go back and punch in. So if that's making any sense.
No, it makes sense to me. So the record Muckle Teerth is going to be coming out August 8th. That's the new Fall of Troy record. Then of course we're talking about your solo record. What did you finish first? So which one is coming out first and which one did you finish first?
I mean, Muckle Teerth has been done technically, like it's been recorded since not too long after Okay, just because, like I said, we used the studio time at Robert Lang. Like, we were supposed to record the demos at our buddy's house, take a couple weeks off, meet up at Robert Lang, then re-record Okay, and then put it out. But instead of that, like, we were like, this is the album, this is Okay. So then we took a break and we ended up in Robert Lang, and I just started throwing all these wacky ideas at the guys, and it kind of happened, you know? So without giving too much away, do you know when this is going to air, perhaps?
Probably in the next couple days.
Before the album comes out?
Yeah, it's going to be like a couple days before the album, because the album's coming out next Friday, so it'll definitely be out by Monday.
Well, I'll give you a little more than I've given everybody else, just because, like, we had, before we were the Fall of Troy, we put out a little demo thing back when we were like in high school or just out of high school, called Martyrs Among the Casualties, which was like a 6-song thing that we just recorded at my dad's buddy's, you know, little crappy studio. And for what it was pretty good. And we'd hand it out at shows, or we'd burn CDs and we'd go play the Paradox and we'd sell them for $5, you know, and it got pretty popular.
It sounds like a very metalcore name. Is that right? Was it pretty metalcore?
The 30 Years War?
The Martyrs Among, what was it?
Martyrs Among the Casualties.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty metalcore name.
It kind of does, but at the same time, we were having an identity crisis at the beginning, because we wanted to sound like this band called the Appleseed Cast, if you've ever
heard. Oh, yeah, I know the Appleseed Cast, yeah.
Yeah, like almost like an almost instrumental band, but with a little bit of vocals. Okay. And I always loved just how ethereal their music was, you know?
Yeah.
And so or 30 Years War, we had another guitar player at the time.
Okay.
And we were like shooting for that, but as soon as we started jamming and we went and saw a Blood Brothers show or two, it was like we started screaming over the stuff we were working on, and just it kind of developed into that. People in our high school like really supported it. We'd like practice, you know, at my house after school from 2 to 5 o'clock. My mom would come home from work at Boeing at 5:30, so everybody had to be gone by, you know, 5:15. And but sometimes there'd be 25, 30, 35 kids like at my house, like in my basement, watching us play music.
It's like a little show.
Yeah, but it was crazy because it was all kinds of different people in my high school. It was like the cheerleader girls, like some of the football players, the dorks, the goths, you know, like the hip hop guys, you know, kind of the like the skateboarders for sure. Mm-hmm. But it didn't matter because like we were a rock band and we were like playing shows and stuff, like nothing big, but we were playing YMCAs and Granges, and once in a while we'd play, you know, Graceland / El Corazon or Paradox, and like people would come out, our high school friends, and it gave all these different people in our high school. We went to a big high school. We went to Kamiak High School in Mukilteo. And it's definitely like kind of a upscale, more white neighborhood kind of thing, you know? But it was cool because you could see after a while that we were kind of breaking down the social barriers of like, you know, the football player didn't usually talk to the skateboard guy at school.
Yeah.
But because they were all hanging out, you know, smoking weed together or like, you know, drinking their beers together for a while after school. Like, that's just the thing that we did 3 or 4 times a week was, you know, Thomas's house, like after school, was like a little caravan to my house.
Yeah.
And we'd play and we'd experiment, you know, with our marijuana or whatever. whatever everybody was doing.
Yeah. You know?
And
the fall of Troy was like the uniting bond that brought that community together.
It really was. And like, you know, not to be big headed, but I think you could ask anybody from that time. It was just a special time. And we gave everybody kind of, like, we were so oddball because we were this yelling, screaming, kind of progressive, crazy band that you couldn't quite put your thumb on. But like, if you liked Pink Floyd, you liked us. If you liked Weezer, you liked us. Mm-hmm. If you liked Hendrix, you liked us. If you liked the Bots or the Blood Brothers, you liked us. You know, it was like, but we were also finding our identity through that. You know, like, how can we not so much please everybody around us, but make music that still all these people find interesting and support, you know? And we always had that local support, and then it just kind of took off, and it kept getting bigger and bigger. But our goal was always just to get the fuck out, you know, as soon as possible and be a touring band. That was like, you know, I, growing up with my dad being a musician, my dad always had these gems of advice, like, you know, if you're a real rock star, you're never a rock star in your own hometown, you know?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Cause everybody knows you and they know who you really are.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. You know, like when you're on the road, you know, take care of yourselves and others and always behave and always be great. You know, I got a tattooed on my thumb. So whenever I'm playing, once the old man's gone, I'll remember that, you know.
That's awesome.
It's a reminder of stuff. And, but yeah, it just really was cool, you know. And then we started getting out on the road, and then we'd go on the road for a month or two, and we'd come back, and then we'd play a Seattle show, and it'd be like catastrophically bigger that we we'd play a home show and stuff, and it was just crazy. It didn't really make sense to us, but at the same time, we felt like we deserved it a little bit, just because we were working so hard, you know, like we were giving up having good grades and stuff like that. But yeah, somehow, and then Equal Vision came into the picture and signed us. And at that time, our other guitar player left, and we dropped the moniker The Fall of Troy, or The 30 Years War, and we renamed it The Fall of Troy. And that's when we kind of wiped all our old songs, like this EP that we were basically touring on and working off of. We had worked on a few new songs, but it was like, okay, now we need to make a whole new album.
Yeah.
So we made a whole full length, and we put that out on a record, an indie label called Luho. And then shortly after Luho and us, our touring continued to go well and get on better and bigger tours over, you know, that year. Then EDR stepped in, and we got you know, a management deal on the table via Velvet Hammer, who managed Deftones and
nice
stuff like that. And we got put on a Deftones tour and a Coheed tour and all that kind of stuff. And then all of a sudden there we were, kind of playing in the big leagues, you know, and making records and doing that kind of thing. So that's kind of how that happened. But the Muppeteer thing now is like, you know, we've split up a couple of times. We've had multiple bass players. I just say The Fall of Troy is the band that, like, we just have all the bass players now. Like, anybody that's played bass for Fall of Troy, they're not in The Fall of Troy, they're not out of The Fall of Troy. It's like they're alumni. They could come
there, you go,
back at any point, you know.
Nice. Yeah. Whoever's sitting in for the night.
Yeah, well, it's more like our new bass player Henry, he was in Just Like Vinyl with us, and he was Fall of Troy's merch guy back then. He's definitely like our bass player now. Yeah. Sorry.
Lost it's all good.
I have you on these crappy like headphones.
No worries.
Are you hearing me?
Yeah, I'm hearing you great.
Okay. I'm like Jimmy rigging my phone to stand up so you can see me. Henry just kind of like rose his way up through the ranks as the merch guy, kind of to like the tour manager, to the being in Just Like Vinyl with me. And then when, you know, time came, it was like, you're the guy for Fall of Troy. And our fans are amazing because they don't down talk like new members at all. You know, it's like, as long as the person's pulling their weight and have a cool personality and they play the notes and they rock it hard, like, people are like, I couldn't believe how with open arms, Henry was accepted into the band, you know.
Absolutely.
People love Tim. Tim's been in the band twice now, and Frank was great. And we had Drew from Sean for a second, you know, mm-hmm. kind of filling in.
Which was awesome.
And yeah. And now Henry has kind of like established his place as being like the full-time guy, you know, but he's not on Muggle Tear.
Okay.
It's crazy because it's such an older record. This was before Henry had moved to bass. So half of the record is just Andrew and I, like I'm okay. playing bass on half of it. And then the other half, which are the newer songs, Tim was still around at that time. So Tim was part of those four songs.
Cool.
And I'm hoping to have Tim do some guest vocal work on my solo record. So
nice.
It's a big incestuous thing where nobody hates anybody, you know? It's
yeah.
it's just we're kind of older now and people just kind of do what they got to do at this point.
Well, so Muggle Tea Earth is coming out August 8th, next week. When can you let us know when your solo album's coming out? Is that announced yet?
No, I don't have a release date for that just because it's been really important to work my own pace with this.
For sure.
But the fact that this pandemic happened and all this like civil unrest has gone down, and me kind of stepping back, you know, on social media to kind of make way for some more important maybe voices to be heard.
Absolutely.
And my buddy Dan just kind of, I kind of had a falling out with the guy that I was making it with because, like I said, he's more of like a come prepared, lay it down, blah, blah, blah. When this is like, no, the creativity happens while it's going, you know? And so Dan is a musician, so he gets excited at these kind of things. Like, you know, when we find the right part or whatever. And
cool.
And we've made leaps and bounds. Like guitars, I think, are done. We just need to sit down and go through them all and make sure all that's done. And then, so we'll get into vocals, but without, you know, it's
no reason to rush it. It sounds like it's the journey, man. And it sounds like, you know, you just, and you know, it's your own baby. It's your own thing. So it sounds like you're just having fun with it, which is rad.
You're right. But I'm also being very careful with it because it's going to be my next big push. You know, it's like, this is my last big push.
Okay.
It's like, I want to be known as more than just the guitar player from Fall of Troy. It's like, I play bass and drums equally as efficient as I play guitar. And I just want that to be known, you know? And mm-hmm. and Andrew, our drummer, he can't tour full time, you know? And I know that Henry plays bass in my solo band as well. Henry's like my right hand man. He plays bass in everything that I'm doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we want to be on the road 250 days a year. You know, we want to be back out on the road, like once things change again.
Yeah.
Like, I don't do anything than this. This is my career. I don't have a regular job and I don't want to. So I just want to make sure that this record is perfect, you know, and take my time and not be on a timeline. Which I think I've been careful of doing, but there's also a sense of urgency. I like to push myself. I like to make sure that I'm not just going, oh, you know, it'll be done when it'll be done. But because of the kind of the halt in the music industry, it gave me the chance to get back in the studio with Dan, you know,
yeah.
to cover the project. And now I can for certain say that this solo album will be coming out next year, like definitely, because I figure, you know, I'll do the Fall of Troy record and let that do its thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, once that kind of starts to like kind of fade away, then just hit them with the Venom again, you know.
Yeah.
Like and hopefully kind of spring pad, and by that time I'm hoping venues will be going or getting ready to go, you know, to
yep.
the point of where we can get out on the road and tour, you know, because Fall of Troy right now is more of a one-off kind of, or like mm-hmm. we'll do a week up and down the West Coast where I want to go do full US tours and full
yeah.
tours and things like that. And it's just a very strong, in my opinion already, like the solo thing I'm working on is very strong. It's very like dark. I got some pretty gnarly like features on this record, like if all goes as planned. My buddy Chino from the Deftones told me
Who's that
this week.
I'm just kidding.
He's a good buddy of mine, but I sent him a song and I was like, you know, I thought maybe you'd like this song, maybe you'd want to sing the hook. And he kind of got back at me like, well, what if I just don't want to sing the hook? What if I just want to sing everything? And if you don't like something, you can, you know, put whatever you want. I'm like, dude, I was like, Tina, listen, man, if you want to take the whole song yourself, you have all liberty to do that. I love if you did that, you know, like, so I talked to him today and he said that he was going to try to get to it, here in the next week or whatever.
That's badass.
And then, my friend Yvette Young, who's in a band Covet, if you've heard of them before.
I have not, but I trust your opinion. I trust your opinion.
They're fantastic. They're like an instrumental band and she's like a total tap, amazing guitar player, but she makes solo records too that are very dark and piano, and she plays violin and she has a beautiful, perfect pitch voice.
Cool.
So I have this really dark, almost Nine Inch Nails, kind of like ballad, really noisy thing that I want to do as like mentality wise, like a traditional duet, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But over a very, like, very, very heavy, doomy, noisy kind of song. And then back in the day, Paul Troy did a song with my friend Rhodey Walker from Protest Hero called Dirty Pillow Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I've hit him up to do a version of Dirty Pillow Talk part two, and he was like, no, not part two, because you know, they're French Canadian.
You gotta do it.
Yeah, so
dude, that's awesome.
God, I can't see these cables, man. But am I still there?
You're still there. I just, I got to see you, man. I see your name, but it's all good. This is suspense. Hey, we got you, man. We got you. Dude, it sounds awesome. The collaboration sound amazing. I wanted to ask you real quick. So you mentioned that your fans, and I wanted to quickly just mention, you were saying how your fans are so supportive of the new bassists and stuff. And I wanted to quickly mention how you guys have like a cult-like rabid fan base that like your fans are dedicated, which is so awesome. If every musician had the support that you guys did, I don't think there would be an issue with the recording record industry at all. I think you guys have such a crazy fan base that are just so dedicated. Is there anything you wanted to say to anyone like, you know, out there that's kind of, you know, just geeked for the new Fall of Troy record and is watching?
Fall of Troy fans and just like fans of my music in general, I don't even like to use the word fan because I think of them as peers, because they're all like, so many of them, like percentage wise, like 85% of them are super talented musicians themselves, you know,
that's
like,
awesome.
They send me their stuff and I'm very impressed, and they're really funny, and they also like, I've been doing these Twitch stream things, and now they're getting to know each other via like the chats and stuff, so they are making their own community.
That's rad.
Becoming friends like via the appreciation for the music, and like really that's my whole thing, dude, is like I want to bring different kinds of people together and give them something in common for a little while, you know, like if I can. I feel that's my duty, and that makes me happier than anything.
That's awesome.
And I definitely don't see them as dorks. I think like the Fall of Troy fans are the coolest dorks of
We're
any
all
fan
dorks.
Base. Like I love our fan base, man, because they're such trolls sometimes, but they care about the music. Like they're challenging. They ask challenging questions and they really want those deep stories. They want those, like, they want to be with the shits, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like big time. And their support level is beyond like what I can even comprehend a lot of the time. So I'm just, shout out to all the people that follow any of my music and contribute or even pay attention to it, because that's it's overwhelming. It really is. There's nothing I can say that would make me sound even cool, like enough to make them feel as cool as I think they actually are. And that's not cool.
That's amazing, man. And it's cool that you recognize that too. And that's awesome. I just have a couple more questions here for you, man. And if you could, why don't you, and if you could show us on camera, if it's not, you know, breaking any rules, pick a scar on your body and tell us the story of how you got that scar.
I don't have a lot of scars, but I got a lot of tattoos that are kind of the same kind of deal. I'm trying to think of a scar. I got a scar on my back that I got pushed into a locker once, but getting bullied by a kid that I was friends with, and he felt terrible about it. But you know, like as far as scars go, like tattoos for me, like I have Blue Moon on my knuckles. Nice. And Blue Moon stands for you know, once in a while in a blue moon, like it's like it's special, you know. Mm-hmm. I just believe like what I do and what my music is special, but also it's truly comes from is when my grandparents got married, that was the song they danced to. Was Blue Moon. So it's
that's
for
great.
My grandparents, you know, like all of my tattoos are like stars in a way that they all definitely mean something. I don't have too many goofies running around on my body.
That's cool, man. Hell yeah.
But,
yes,
I have a scar you can't see, but it's right here, like on the inside of my nose, and I hit myself in the face with a guitar in Manchester once, and like the tuning peg like had a string that was cut all the way, and it went into my eye, and I had to walk across the street to the ER, and they shot glue into it because there was no way to bandage it. And I had to wear eye patch for the rest of the tour. And
that's so brutal.
Well, and the doctor was like, if you would have hit yourself, you know, couple millimeters to the side, you would have lost your vision, absolutely 100%. But I don't have any real, like, gnarly scars or anything, but I would just say, like, my tattoos are kind of like my scars, you know?
Yeah.
They're my reminders. They're my, they're my coloring book of life, I guess.
I like that. Well, like again, Muckle Tea Earth is coming out this Friday, new Fall of Troy record. And then we'll be, looking out for your new solo record, which, keep us updated with and just follow you on socials and we'll follow along with that. So, there is one more thing, you know, that I'm a fan of wrestling, and you said that there were a couple things you wanted to show.
Hold on. Let me grab them real quick.
All right. I will
show you how deep I am with this.
Sounds good.
Hold on one sec.
Yep. So Thomas is, and he was mentioning he's an old school fan of wrestling, and, I'm personally a huge mark for pro wrestling, whether it be, Japanese wrestling, whether it be WWF, WCW. I mean, I still watch wrestling. That's how nerdy I am. In 2020, I still watch wrestling, but Thomas was mentioning that he goes back in the day with some old school stuff, and he wanted to show some memorabilia from back in the day. So let's take a look.
So I've got a big Bret Hart collection like my whole life.
Nice.
And I've recently come in. So this one is like, I don't know if you can see it
here. Yeah.
Like this is like from Royal Rumble or King of the Ring. When he run King of the Ring in like 95, 96, something like that.
That's a nice
this figure's dope because you can replace his head, his arms, his hands, stuff like that.
Wow.
Pretty dope. My girlfriend hooked me up with that one, but the one that's my pride and joy is I got the super limited edition, like the all pink.
Oh, wow.
So this is from Royal Rumble 1993 when he fought Razor Ramon.
Yeah.
And that was the first pay-per-view that I ever ordered, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually put in a bid on this figure because it was insanely expensive.
That's amazing.
I put an eBay bid down on it for like 60 or 80 bucks, not thinking I'd get it, right?
Yeah.
And I had totally forgotten about it. Like totally forgotten about it. And like a couple months later, I got a package, and sure enough, dude, I don't know how, but I had won won the raffle of it. And it showed up, and I broke into tears like a little girl. You know, like it was like, because that match particularly stands out to me as being like that was the formative. Like, I loved the Hart Foundation back then. Like, anything Bret Hart's ever done, he's my hero, man. But with the all pink, dude, like back in that day,
you had to get it,
dude. I had to get it, but I didn't think I was gonna get it. You know? I didn't think I had a chance in hell. And I came home from the studio early because my girlfriend was like, "There's a package here. I don't know like where it's from." And I kind of was like, "No, that could be it." You know, like opened it up, and I just like,
that was it.
She has a video of me opening it up and just like freaking out, like almost in tears, and just like dancing around and like.
That's amazing.
I keep them in the boxes, but once in a while, man, like when I'm nerded out enough and I'm like, go back and watch the matches, like I'll crack them out and like mess with them a little bit, but
put them back in.
Yeah, I put them back in. But I have wrestling figures dated back to the Hasbro ones, the old Hasbro ones, the plastic ones.
Yeah,
like I've been collecting wrestling figures since I was a little boy, you know. So, and they just keep getting better and better, man.
They do.
These ones are amazing.
Yep. Like, just the Mattel's.
The detail.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, now it's Mattel again.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It was Mattel. Well, and then they did the Jax figures, which were really crappy.
Yeah, I still have a lot of them, but they're not very good.
I do too. But they just were goofy. They were like, they didn't look like the wrestlers, and I missed the old ones. But now Mattel's taken back over, and they're like really doing some legit. But I mean, they only made like, I think, like 150, 200 of those. Those all pink ones, and it's specifically from that match, which is like my favorite match of his, like ever. And it has like on the back of it, it talks about the match and like what was going on and all this stuff. And I remember thinking to myself, man, if they could just ever make one figure, and they just made that special edition, like 1993 or 1994, one of those few years, maybe 94, like Royal Rumble, like Bret versus Razor, where he wore it all pink with like the polyester pink jacket, and
so
he never
awesome.
Wore that outfit ever again.
Never
just
again.
That one Royal Rumble, and it's when they announced the Caesar's Palace WrestleMania coming up after that one.
Yeah.
So that was good years for wrestling, man. So it was cool to hear that you're a big wrestling head. So who's your guy? Who's your go-to?
You're not gonna like this. I was a Shawn Michaels guy.
Dude, okay, here's the thing. Not a big Shawn Michaels fan, but a lot of respect for Shawn Michaels. It's kind of like how I feel about AC/DC. Like, AC/DC, I could do without hearing it for the rest of my life, but AC/DC, so important to rock music that I can't even hate on them. You know, without them, you wouldn't have so much stuff. You know what I mean? Like so many things. So I gotta have the ultimate respect for AC/DC. I wouldn't ever say like, oh, I hate AC/DC. And I play SGs, you know? So so my band loves to give me and be like, oh, you want to know why Thomas, Kevin, you want to know why Thomas plays SGs? Because he loves Angus. And I'm just like, yeah.
Shawn Michaels, the AC/DC of the WWF.
Yeah, but yo, like you know it. What? Think about how many fantastic matches that he had with Bret, or had with Razor, like ladder, ladder match.
Yep.
I think the very first ladder match.
Undertaker
ever
matches?
I think the very first ladder match in WWF was on like Saturday Night Superstars still, and it was Bret and Shawn Michaels, and people at the time didn't realize, but it totally changed the game. Like, so
dude, Shawn I didn't Michaels realize how deep you went with it
man. Oh,
I didn't realize how deep you should just start a wrestling podcast, man.
It's been said. I really love old Taker too. Like old Undertaker.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, like old, like late 80s to mid 90s Taker is just some of the best, you know,
iconic.
For me. Yeah. Iconic too.
Iconic.
But that's cool. That's great that you love that, man. Cause, you know, in the future, whether we're interviewing or not, you can always hit me up and we can talk some wrestling.
Oh, absolutely. I got a Bret Hart figure I could send you.
What kind?
Funko Pop.
Oh, that's one that I do not have.
I got a Bret Hart Funko Pop for you if you want it.
My buddy works for Funko, actually.
Oh, cool.
And I've been hounding him for one, and he always says he's going to hook me up. But yeah, dude, I'd love to add one of those to my collection. It's like any... I have... You don't even want to know how many Bret Hart figures I have, man. Like, it's...
It's amazing.
It's crazy. But I always just liked his aesthetic, man. I always just liked he... like, who else is going to wear pink and black and make it rock that badass? Like, just the technical wrestling and kind of going against the grain of, like, you know, all this change and all this kind of, like, even when he got into the Attitude Era, you know, Bret Hart was, like, the last great one fighting for wrestling to be kind of wholesome and and stuff like that.
He stuck up for it, yeah.
But he did a great job, and, dude, and, like, come on, the screw job, like, what a fucking drama that was, man.
It's crazy.
But some people still think that whole thing was a work.
I know.
Yeah, Cornette swears that it wasn't a work, but...
Jim Cornette.
I love Jim Cornette, but there's people that swear that it wasn't a work, but it's also the people that if you would have told them it was a work, they would have blabbed and said it was a work by now, I feel like, too.
Right.
I feel like
Vince Russo would have totally blabbed.
Oh, I hate him. Or like even Jim Ross knows maybe if it was a work or not. I mean,
for sure.
I don't think it was a work. It's too real.
Yeah.
But either way, what a saga that was.
Absolutely. Dude, I hate to cut the interview, but I literally have 2% left on my laptop. It's about to die.
No worries. Well, no worries. I think we've hit most things, man.
Dude, we've hit most things, and we went deep in the rabbit hole of WWF, which is amazing. Yes. Dude, again, Muckle T Earth coming out on Friday. Any final words, man?
Just keep your eyes and ears open. My proverbial musical guns are loaded, and so there's going to be a lot coming down the pipeline from me in the next year. So you know, everybody, be ready for that, and buckle up and hang tight because it's going to be quite the ride.
Awesome, man! Thanks a lot for the interview, brother.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin.
I'll talk to you soon, man.
Yeah, later, homie.
Listen up, football fans! You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Once upon an office so dreary, Wendy's HR presentation made everyone weary.
Was it a bore?
A snore. Could have used more charm, for sure.
That's it?
Wendy opened Canva, looking ecstatic. She began to work her magic.
Docs, prints, presentations galore. All in one design. Not dull anymore.
The next day, Wendy wowed the crowd. They clapped loud.
I feel so proud.
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.